people are good at identifying other people's feelings, just like horses are.
Yeah, I was like, people are good at being horses. Yeah.
People are good at being horses. That's the moral of the story for this episode. Well,
if you're happy with the same old ways of dating,
if you enjoy sucking at communication,
and you have no desire to improve your romantic life, then our podcast might not be for you.
But if you want some out-of-the-box ideas to deepen your current relationships,
broaden your sexual horizons,
develop a better understanding of yourself,
or learn more about non-monogamy, then you've come to the right place. I'm Jace.
I'm Emily.
And I'm Dedeker.
And this is the Multiamory Podcast.
Songs I know I did, false and made up for myself to fit.
On this episode of the Multiamory Podcast, we're talking about what to do when your partner is feeling hesitant about polyamory. Chances are, if you are listening to our podcast, you are the one with an interest in non-monogamy, and you may be encountering the less-than-thrilled feelings of an existing partner or a new partner.
God, haven't we all been there?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
In both scenarios, I think, also.
I do want to say, though, that also, you know, if you are listening to this because you are the one who is feeling more hesitant, that it can also be really useful to get the perspective of the other a little bit. Because, yeah, like you're saying, we've both been on both sides of this.
Yeah, on either. I mean, I've definitely been on either side of it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Have both of you, though? Because, Jace, you were the one who came to me about it specifically.
Right. Yeah, in terms of polyamory, yeah, like I was definitely... have never been in the position of not being sure I want to try that.
Yeah.
But I have had that with other
partners,
relationship structures or relationship things where it's sort of like, you know, whether it's some particular type of group sex or like a particular way they want to do a relationship, that there's kind of that, like, I don't know, like, I'm just more hesitant. I'm not totally closed off to it, but I'm not, you know what I mean? Like, whatever it is. Like, I've been in that in different situations.
Yeah, that's similar for me, and that's actually previewing something I kind of want to hit a little bit later on in this podcast about that.
Okay,
yeah. Cool.
So the reason that we're doing this topic is because, Emily, you got a question at an event that we did recently.
Yeah, so Dedeker was on this incredible polyamory panel with Janet Hardy, one of the co-authors of The Ethical Slut, and also Tristan Taramino, who wrote the author of Opening Up. And Dedeker Winston, author of The Smart Girl's Guide to Polyamory,
was crazy.
Also on this panel. But I had a woman come up to me when the two of them were off somewhere, and just really quickly she asked, like, well, I have a partner who I'm introducing polyamory to, and I'm not really sure how to get them into it because they seem really hesitant about it. Mm-hmm. And so we didn't have a lot of time to talk about it, and so I was like, hey,
so I hope she finds this podcast.
Yeah, we should talk about this for sure. So yeah, kind of went into that. But
It's a very common situation, right? You know, either if you're a couple who's been monogamous up to this point and now you're opening up for the first time, maybe one of you is more gung-ho about it, one of you is not so sure about it.
Yeah.
Or if you've been poly or non-monogamous for a long time when you're relatively comfortable with it, but you start dating someone new who's brand new to it. You know, if you're going to start polyprenticing someone who's still kind of feeling out, like, I don't know if this is for me or not, which is a slightly different situation, but can still be similar in that way.
Yeah.
Well, and can I say that even if you are established in this, but for whatever reason, like, you and your partner haven't been dating that often, or, like, you kind of were in a monopoly situation and then now your partner is going to start dating, that sometimes these things can be good to revisit at that time.
Mm. Sure.
Like, I think... Yeah, I definitely had a time maybe like 6 months ago where my partner, who had been more monogamous, was starting to date someone, and I got like really riled up about it and like having feelings of jealousy and feelings of like anxiety about it, and it was good to sort of rehash out like why I was feeling those things and sort of do some of these methods. So
Yeah, and just like Emily was saying, that we got this question at the panel, or that Emily did, that just like a day or two before that, a friend of mine was asking me a very similar thing with her and her boyfriend, where, you know, her boyfriend was more hesitant, actually her husband in this case, but was, you know, hesitant, and they were trying to get back into it, and she was looking for resources, and I realized we didn't have a specific episode about this recently.
Yeah,
it's funny, 'cause I just remembered at the panel, because we also had some tables set up so that those of us who had books could do some signings or sell books. And I don't remember if Em was there for this, but the guy came up who was like, is this a good book for giving to someone who I'm trying to convince to be Polly?
Wow, yeah. And what did you say? Yes, obviously.
That's well, what I said,
that's it. Yeah, I let Jace do the talking because I feel weird talking about my own book sometimes.
Sure.
But yeah. And then, like, I signed it, and I was like, should I sign it and being like, don't be scared, or like,
good luck, it'll be great.
Yeah, it's funny. I feel weird about that, because I think, I mean, I think that, obviously, books are very helpful in this arena, and obviously myself, you know, I read The Ethical Slut, and that was my big first foray into it, and that was, like, helpful, but the act of, like, giving your partner a book of, like, this is what I'm interested in can be a little bit, but then, I don't know, sometimes it can be good, I think, for people to have a common language if they've both read the same book.
That's a good point.
Yeah, to have a common language, like common reference points, rather than just one person being like, well, I read this book and this is what it says to do.
Yeah, so we're doing this now.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah.
Nice. So we broke this down into a few sort of categories, so let's just get started on that. So the first one we've called warming up. So this is kind of about, you know, what do you do before you're actually taking those steps into it,
and you're just kind of having
those, you're having those discussions. You're trying to think of, like, how can we build sort of a foundation for this, and how can we get our communication working, you know, in the right way to enter into this feeling as strong as possible.
Yeah, because a lot of people are already just, like, so intimidated by the idea of bringing up the topic at all.
Absolutely.
You know, and that can vary wildly depending on what your channel of communication is like with your partner. Sometimes people are already very open and it's maybe a little bit easier to bring it up in the first place. Some people, it's very closed to talk about any kind of meta relationship stuff, and it's very, very scary. We do have a great blog post on our website by Gracie X. And I think the title's pretty on the nose. It's just, like, how to talk to your partner about opening up your relationship.
Right.
She gives some really good tips, you know, things like, you know, if you're really scared about their reaction, maybe don't focus so much on the vocabulary, because sometimes even saying the phrase polyamory or open marriage or swinging brings a lot of attachments and associations with it.
And
so
anxiety,
trying to find some different vocabulary for it, emphasizing things like that there's not going to be any fast hairpin turns, or emphasizing things like, you know, I want us to explore this together. Or I think that that one of my favorite tips of hers is when you ask about it, like, not even asking, hey, so I've been thinking about opening our marriage, or hey, what do you think about polyamory? And be like, hey, how would you feel about having a conversation about non-monogamy, you know? Which is softening it, but putting the emphasis on, like, having the conversation rather than doing the action can help to also soften that a little bit.
I also, you know, in doing that too, once you start having that conversation, I know that something that Emily and I ran into when we opened up our relationship years ago was that, you know, we started, you know, we were going to do an open relationship, and then we found this term polyamory and, you know, looked up books and stuff, and I was reading Sex at Dawn and she was reading The Ethical Slut. And we both ended up with very different ideas of what polyamory could look like because of the examples in those. And I think it's also important, like Decker was saying, that if you jump in with the term polyamory or jump in with the term open marriage, people have all these associations. And that might not even be what you're looking for.
Exactly. That may not even be where you guys end up. That's the best for you.
Right. Yeah. Whereas, like, when Emily was reading The Ethical Slut, she'd be like, oh my gosh, I was just reading this section about, like, people, you know, all living together and raising a kid. Like, is that what you want then? Is that, and I was like, I don't know.
Good question.
That it's, there can be those associations. Even if you are doing your due diligence and reading the books, it can still be, you know, you might find it helps, I guess, to read sort of the same thing, or to do it in such a way that you still have open discussion.
Yeah.
That it's not just like, here's a book that explains what I want, because no one book's going to summarize
exactly
your part of that journey right now.
Well, and can I piggyback off of this? I know I'm jumping ahead slightly, but but to truly assess like what your partner's needs are and what their wants are, and then go back and say like, what are my needs and wants with this? Especially if you're coming forward and saying like, hey, I'm the one who wants to be non-monogamous, but kind of trying to assess like what you think that that would look like.
Yeah. Right.
And then having them do the same and like what best case scenarios are, what worst case scenarios are, try to how to work around both of those.
Well, I feel like this exercise, part of why it fits into this warming up category is because it's also just a good exercise to do even if you're not opening up a relationship.
Sure.
If you're just, you have no plan to change your monogamous relationship to anything else.
Absolutely.
It's still a really great thing to do. So let's talk about that a little bit now since we're on the subject.
Yeah, certainly. Yeah. I know that I've mentioned on this podcast a couple times, and also I mentioned in my book about when I wrote my constitution. I wrote this crazy, like, 10-page document that was modeled off of the U.S. Constitution and, like, with super flowery, nerdy language. I loved it.
Yeah, it's great. It's great.
Most of my partners that I showed it to were like, this is weird. but it, like, very clearly and specifically laid out, like, these are the things that I expect in all of my relationships, and these are the things, like, these are things that I want to receive, and these are the things I'm willing to give. Mm-hmm. To my partners as well. So things like I want to receive the ability to have like privacy with each of my partners, or the ability to have intimate moments with each of my partners, such as being able to say I love you, being able to introduce them to family members, being able to travel with them. Things like I want to be able for there to be space for both myself and whatever partner to express feelings, positive or negative, and opinions and thoughts, things like that. And it was, I mean, it was a crazy exercise, but it was so illuminating to really break down, like, really, what is it that I want and what I envision? What does that look like? That's outside of just being like, well, I just want happy relationships or loving relationships.
And a lot of the things that you put in there were not just specific to polyamory, like the example you gave.
Yeah.
Like, one of them was just about being spoken to with respect, whether it's good times or you're in bad times.
Yeah,
right?
I love that one.
Fight. Yeah.
But also that you said specifically, like, this is what I'm going to give and this is what I expect to get, that it is like a two-way street
there.
Yeah,
exactly.
It's not just like, well, you need to do all this, but also I will do this for you.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, I kind of tried to make this, this give and take, like, this idea, like, sure, I expect that, like, my privacy and the privacy of my partners will be respected, but in turn, I'm going to give that same respect of respecting your privacy and letting you have private and intimate moments with your partners, things like that.
Yeah, and I don't always think that somebody may, like, say, oh, yeah, obviously, to that. Like, that really, the fact that you put that in there so specifically was great.
But I think what's interesting with the whole Constitution thing is, I mean, a lot of people in this world, in this community, talk about, like, coming up with agreements or coming up with contracts with a particular partner or with all of your partners, and I do think that's great, but I think it's really important to make it for yourself alone also. You know, to, like, kind of, you know, in your imagination, put yourself in this vacuum where it's like the partners that you have don't exist. Like, you're just thinking about yourself alone as an individual, and like, what kind of relationships would you want? What do you expect?
How would you want to be treated?
Ideal?
Exactly. So that it's not based on just like, what's the best blend of what I want with plus what this partner
plus what
wants.
What I think they want.
Or plus what I think this partner wants. You know, what is truly the blend
the
of like, what I want?
Yeah.
That can also be very illuminating.
We talked about this other thing of practicing talking in detail about former partners.
Yeah.
So where did that come from again?
So that came from with some people that we know that we're working with right now. A couple who's opening up, in the process of opening up their marriage.
Yeah.
And they got a lot of value out of spending quite a lot of time talking to each other about past relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And not just in the way we normally do of, like, complaining about a stupid ex.
Right.
You know, but really getting into detail of, like, what did you love about this person? What did this person love about you? What were the highlights? What was the most challenging? Like, when you guys were sexual together, like, did they introduce anything to you? Did you discover anything? Like, what did you like about the sex? What did you not like about the sex? And being able to share that with each other was, they found, was a really good kind of training ground for then being able to talk about other relationships that they might have in the present. Because that's, like, we don't have these social scripts for talking to a loved, like, to a romantic partner about other romantic partners.
No,
not at all. Like, that whole realm is something that we still kind of stumble through and we're not sure how to talk about. But being able to talk about in detail about a relationship you had in the past, not just the bad parts, but also the good parts, I think is really good training. And I think also can be very another illuminating exercise, because if you're finding that listening to your partner talk positively about an ex brings up something in you,
sure.
Like, I mean, that doesn't necessarily mean that it's a bad thing and that you can never be non-monogamous or whatever, but that's just something to be aware of.
Yeah.
Like, oh, huh. Like, it makes me feel a little weird listening to my partner have a, you know, talk about good memories with someone else.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there can be all sorts of different sources of what those insecurities might come from, whether it's whether it's it touches on something that you feel inadequate in yourself. Those are kind of the obvious things we might look at, but I've also found a surprising one is that often I would have jealousy triggered by someone having an experience or something in their life that I haven't let myself have, even if I might have wanted it.
Interesting.
Whether that's a sexual experience or a type of relationship or a number of relationships or, you know, whatever it is, that I'll be jealous or like almost want to feel like it's bad that they did that thing because it's something that I've kind of wanted to do, but I've never let myself because I was too scared it would offend someone else. That it's kind of this like projecting, you know, like I would worry about doing this because it upset someone else. And so I'm going to be upset when I find out someone else did it, rather than being like, oh man, if I just let myself off the hook that it's okay to want to do that thing and that that would be okay, then I'm also not going to be as hurt. Well, threesomes is a common one I think comes up for people, actually. I think threesomes comes up for a lot of people. That's not what I'm talking about specifically.
But if you find out, you mean that like a partner had, like a threesome and you're like, oh.
Right. That maybe that's that something sense. That, you know, maybe if you're a guy, that's something maybe that you've you know, wanted to do but have felt like, oh, but oh, that's like a typical guy thing to want, so like I'm gonna quash down the fact that I would want that. And so it'll make you extra jealous of someone else getting to have it.
Yeah.
Right? That there's sort of all these different relationships that can happen in your own head to make something be vulnerable for you.
Well, I think that part of what this exercise really highlights is, and I think that the reason why sometimes people get jealous of the past, and I know that I used to get jealous of the past all the time, particularly when I was monogamous, is because we're so used to wanting to like couple up and blend our identities with this other person and think about that, like, now like I am this identity of me plus this other person,
and
so then
then
to talk to this person about times when they were not part of that identity with you, when they were kind of their own identity or identified with someone else,
can
be challenging. But I think that's so important because that is a big part of opening up, is learning to be a little bit more independent in your identities and being okay with your partner having an identity and a life that is a little bit separate from yours.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
For a long time now, we've been fans of AdamandEve.com for getting sex toys or lingerie or accessories, things like that. It's just a fantastic resource with a huge selection. And now, not only do we have a fantastic offer, but we also have a promo code that will work on AdamMale.com and EvesToys.com, which are their sites specifically for LGBTQ audiences. And our code is fantastic. It's 50% off of almost any item in the store, and free discreet shipping when you use our code MULTI.
Yes, we love AdamandEve.com and have for years. They are our oldest and longest sponsor, and they just keep on giving great gifts to us and to our listeners. You can bring more pleasure and satisfaction into your bedroom by going to AdamandEve.com, AdamMale.com, or EvesToys.com and select any one item. It can be, you know, an adventurous new toy, or anything you desire, something fun, something sexy, whatever sounds good.
So just enter offer code MULTI at checkout and you'll get 50% off almost any item plus free shipping. That's multi, M-U-L-T-I, at adamandeve.com, adammail.com, or evestoys.com. This is an exclusive offer that is specific to this podcast, and it's better than any offer that is currently available on their site. So again, use code MULTI to get you not just the 50% discount, but also the 100% free shipping. Code M-U-L-T-I.
Now, the next section of our talk on this is called Moving Forward. Mm-hmm. So just... How do we start doing this? Yeah. How do we
that go? Question gets asked all the time. Like, yeah. How the heck do I start?
Exactly.
Like, what do I do? Of course, context is always everything. Mm-hmm. Anything that we say here is not going to be like a hard and fast rule that's going to mm-hmm. work for everyone in every single relationship and situation.
Right.
Usually we recommend, if your partner is more hesitant, but they are willing to give this a try, let them go first.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, let them make the OkCupid profile first. Mm-hmm. Let them go on a date first.
Yeah.
You know, if anything, it kind of establishes that you're not just, like, gunning to try to bang someone as quick as possible.
Right. Or
that
you're not just trying to get out of this thing as
yes,
fast as you can.
Exactly. And I think that what's also really valuable about that is that if you are the partner who's a little more enthusiastic about this,
yeah. mm-hmm.
that letting your partner go first can really illuminate for you mm-hmm. Whether or not you're emotionally ready for this
totally,
or
sure.
not. Or it can highlight, like, oh, like, I thought that this would all be perfect and great, but now that my partner's also doing this, I'm mm-hmm. like, oh, like, this is kind of challenging, or, oh, yeah. this unexpected insecurity came up. And if anything, it can also help you have a little more empathy for your partner.
Totally.
Sure.
If you're kind of putting yourself in their position a little bit.
Something, though, with this, if you are letting your partner go first, that it is important to... That partner is willing to actually go ahead and do it.
Yeah, it's actually going.
Yeah, yeah. And it's not always just going to be, oh,
now
yeah,
we're just waiting forever.
Exactly.
Once I find someone I'm interested in, and then it kind of takes
never
forever
happens.
To get there.
Yeah.
But also, I feel like there's the other thing to be aware of is that this sense of letting your partner go first is not just sort of like, oh, they've gone first, now we can just go.
Sure.
It's more like needs to be sort of the whole philosophy of, like, pace yourself a little bit mm-hmm. to... So this isn't some terrifying thing that just feels like you can't wait to be with anyone but them.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That it's not just let them have a first date first, but, you know, don't rush into finding a bunch of dates for yourself either.
Yeah.
To just take it slow, because their first date might suck.
Yeah.
Emily's first, like, 10 dates kind of sucked. Like, that was a really hard thing for her.
Yeah, definitely.
Right, but once you started meeting better people, all of a sudden it was like, oh, I this makes sense
absolutely.
To me.
Absolutely.
So I have a question.
Yeah?
So how do you think that advice applies if it's not that you're a couple opening up for the first time, but, like, you're already poly, maybe you have a couple partners or a couple relationships, and you're dating someone who's new to this?
Who's new to it,
yeah. How do you think that this applies?
I feel like it's an entirely different thing.
Yeah.
I feel like in that context, my advice falls more into the being unapologetically poly mm-hmm. type of advice. That rather than...
So you feel like it's a little bit of the opposite.
It's almost the opposite. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. Because I feel like it's a very different thing to start dating someone who's poly. I feel like it's actually much safer and more comfortable, even if you might not think so at first. If that person is just doing poly like they do it and are full on how they are, so that your relationship...
As in, like, open and honest about, like,
they're
going
open and
on
honest,
dates
but that they're going on just as many dates as they normally would. Mm-hmm. They're not, like, tailoring, you know, scaling it back for you. They're not, like, sugarcoating things mm-hmm. for you at first until you get used to it. And a lot of people do this. I've done it with a lot of people
totally.
That I've dated.
Yeah.
And it almost always...
Goes poorly.
Backfires.
It goes poorly. It backfires, or it just makes things harder.
Yeah.
Because then... The problem is that you're not consistent.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the reason why it's different, is that in an established relationship that you're opening up, this is the thing that's inconsistent. This is the change. So you want to make that change comfortable and mm-hmm. slow and check in along the way. Whereas when you start dating someone new, to try to, like, scale it back or shelter them and then start to change it, it's like making them go through that change process. And change is what's so hard.
That's true.
Whereas if I just... you know, my favorite example was from an article that I read, and I wish I could remember what the article was or who wrote it, but he talked about how he had a... you know, his wife would go on dates sometimes, but she doesn't date a ton, doesn't have a lot of casual partners, more like a few long-term partners.
Yeah.
And he has the author had a girlfriend who he met, like, at an orgy or something, and she's goes to sex parties a lot.
Yes, I remember this article now.
And he was saying that the fact that she's at sex parties and orgies all the time doesn't bother me at all, because she's always done that since I've known her. I've always known that's a part of her. If my wife were to suddenly do that, I could be fine with it, but it'd take me a while.
Yeah,
that would be a hard change, because it's a change.
Yeah.
So I would say my advice is opposite in those cases.
Okay.
And I would really strongly urge people not to put on the kid gloves and not sugarcoat things for a new partner. And I've even had people, like friends of women that I've dated, who, you know, it ended up not working out. She ended up not being okay with polyamory. And friends being like, you should have, like, made it easier or been gentler or sheltered her more from it or, like, eased her into it more. And I, you know, I'll respond, I'm like, actually, I think it's the opposite. I think I should have been more just doing what I was doing and being super, super upfront about it from the beginning. So if it wasn't going to work out totally, it could have happened sooner or I think it actually could have worked out. But I think it was the change that caused the problem.
I know a really common piece of advice, especially given to people who are in the context of, you know, just opening up a monogamous relationship, is to move at the pace of the slowest person. You know, so that's really common advice. People will say, like, whoever's the most hesitant, like, you know, kind of take care of them. Make sure you're not moving too fast for them. And I understand the wisdom of that advice. However, I do often take issue with it because I think it's a false dichotomy. Because I don't think that it's as black and white as one person's the fast partner, one person's the slow partner. And this is what I was saying that we were kind of previewing, is because, like, sure, maybe I'm the one who's more encouraging of, like, let's be polyamorous. But then maybe you're the one who's like, well, let's try going to some sex parties. And I'm like, I don't know about that. But with you, with polyamory, you're like, oh, I don't know about that.
Yeah,
you know?
That's interesting.
Or it could be very different aspects where one person is the slow person and one person is the fast person. You know, one person might be like, I'm totally into this non-monogamy thing, and both people are on board. But then when it comes to actual feelings being involved, then one person is like, wait, gotta pump the brakes. You know, so I think that those roles of one person being slow and one person being fast, not only can they swap often, but it's just like a little bit more complex than just one person or the other.
I agree also, because I think that setting this precedent of saying, this is my partner who's less into it, or this is my partner who is slower about this or still not sure, is also just reinforcing the idea that that's always how it's going to be. And you'll try to make it fit that, even if maybe that person is starting to get into polyamory, if you both created this narrative that they're the one who is hesitant about it. It's like, again, it's that identity, it's change. It's hard to let go of that identity of being the one who's less into it.
I suppose, but, like, there's also the really common thing of, like, a hetero married couple where the husband initiates it, says, like, let's open our relationship. The wife is hesitant, but then as soon as they start online dating, she gets 5 dates right away. Is suddenly on the fast track to finding a boyfriend. He's having a much harder time. Then suddenly he's the more hesitant one. You know, like, so it totally can swap.
That can definitely happen.
So moving on, we're going to striking a balance, which this is difficult. For example, things are not always going to be equal. We just kind of talked about that. The fact that
good
women...
Good segue. Well done, guys.
What? Yeah, no. Well done. But it is true that just... I don't know if this is a statistic or what, but I know that when I was on OkCupid and when Jace was on OkCupid at the same time, I would get messages daily. And Jace might not get a message for a month. You know? And sometimes it does feel mismatched in that way. Or if, like, say a partner is going out on a date and having a sleepover, saying like, well, you can only have a sleepover if I'm having a sleepover. Trying to kind of have this equality thing occur, when in reality that may not be the case.
Or even the case of, you know, getting into it and saying, oh, well, if you, you know, how many partners do you have? I have to find that many. Or it's like, oh, if you're dating somebody else, I need to be dating someone else. And maybe that leads you to get into a relationship that you don't really like that much, or stay in a relationship that you're like, you know, this was fine as sort of a casual few dates, but now I'm continuing this relationship that I'm not super stoked about, just because I think I have to be, either in order to be poly, which is another thing, thinking you have to be dating multiple people to identify as polyamorous.
Yeah, sure.
But then also just that, oh, I'm a partnerist, so I have to be, otherwise I must not be happy.
Yeah.
Because happiness is measured by number of partners or something.
Yeah, yeah, or by, like, how excited that partner is about you, or vice versa.
Yeah.
Because your partner may be having a really intense relationship and really intense feelings, and honestly, you may not be there with a person.
Right.
And
right.
that can feel difficult and not equal.
Yeah.
So I feel like something that comes up for me when I talk to people about this is the idea that it's not always going to be the same.
Mm-hmm.
That it's going to come and go for both of you in terms of how your relationships are going, numbers of partners, whatever. You know, I've had times where I've, you know, kind of had to combat a little bit of that sort of competitive jealousy of like, oh, my partner has this, you know, this really great serious relationship, and like none of mine seem to be lasting past 3 months or whatever. And you know, and then months later you find out their relationship actually was really kind of shitty.
Yeah.
It was awful. And you didn't know that, right? Like, you don't really know quite what their experience is.
Yeah.
You can only really focus on your own.
Yeah.
I've also had times where, you know, a partner's going on a lot of dates, and you'll have that jealousy of them going on dates. Then if you really stop to think about it, it's like, God, you know, actually doesn't sound like something I'd want to do right now.
Mm-hmm.
But it's tricky when we think we have to be, because we have to somehow keep up.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We have to, like, keep this equilibrium.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
I think the idea of balance is interesting, because what also comes up a lot is people talking about monopoly relationships.
Sure.
And I feel like, did we do an episode on monopoly? If
we did,
it was
a long
ages
time
ago.
Yeah.
We need to do it again. We're due to do it again, because a number of people reached out to us about this.
Yeah.
And the monopoly question came up at the panel
Absolutely.
The other day also.
And some people were kind of hard and fast, like, no, this isn't great. And, and some people said, okay, I've seen it work, and I think it can.
Yeah, it's hard. Like, when I was writing that section in my book, I really tried to do a lot of research and reached out to a lot of people to ask, like, are you in a monopoly relationship? Does it work out great? Does it not work out great? And it's really hard, because it's like there are those few shining gems of examples when it works out great.
Yeah.
And people are truly happy. Yeah. No one's feeling disenfranchised or taken advantage of or anything like that. But I just feel like it's more likely to not work out than actually work out, personally. Unless, like what I always tell people is that for a monopoly relationship to work out, it requires both sides to have, like, nearly endless compassion and understanding for the other person and what the other person wants.
Yeah.
So, I think something, though, because a lot of people, I think, ask this when either they have a partner who's a little bit hesitant about polyamory or isn't sure how they feel about it, or maybe that they're the one themselves who's not so sure about it. So then they start thinking, well, maybe I'm monogamous and they're polyamorous, so I'm going to look into what a monopoly relationship is. And I think that an important thing to clarify here is that polyamory, in terms of a relationship, describes, you know, the way the relationship's set up in terms of what you're essentially allowed to do, right? Whereas monogamy is defined by this sort of
closed.
For some people, it's more of a rule. For others, it's more of an agreement. But, like, you can't do these things. I think the thing people get caught up on is they think that polyamory means I have to date multiple people. So I guess what I would argue with any mono-poly relationship is that it's actually just a poly relationship where one person chooses not to date anyone else.
Yeah.
Well, and I think that's an important distinction to make.
Well, yeah, I've
to
said
go
that.
With the subject of inequality.
I mean, like, I have said that before, that, like, a monopoly relationship, either it's a poly relationship or it's a monogamous relationship.
Well,
like,
yeah.
It's kind of one or the other,
because
depending on what the agreements are.
Mm-hmm. And it's still, like, how you deal with your partner dating someone else.
Yeah.
And that can still mean polyamory.
Mm-hmm.
If you're, because, I don't know, if Jace and Dedeker are dating and Jace is just not wanting to date anyone else, but he's still, like, you know, actively being kind and good to Dedeker when she's dating a bunch of people, that still is polyamory to me.
Right. Yeah.
It's like the fact that you can be someone who identifies as being polyamorous and be single.
Yeah.
That it's not defined by the fact you're dating multiple people. It's about how you approach those relationships and what you expect from them and how you you know, how you would treat them when they're with other people.
Yeah.
So yeah, like Dedeker has said before, and I was just saying now, like, they're monopoly relationships, I actually don't think are
real things.
Well, it's that it's not a monogamous relationship. No. Unless it were monopoly, meaning that one person says it's okay for you to date other people, and the other person says, but you can't. Yeah. Then that's a monopoly relationship. Mm, but I don't think most of us would think that's a very healthy relationship model.
Probably not.
But it's
so
more
much.
That you can have a poly relationship and just choose not to date anyone else.
Yeah.
But it just doesn't mean that you can't. You mm-hmm. could, but you just might choose not to.
Yeah.
Like, there are times where it's like, you know, I just don't really want to.
Yeah.
You know, date new people. Maybe I only have one partner right now or whatever.
And that's okay.
And that's okay. Yeah. But it doesn't have to be equal. You don't have... Like, polyamory isn't so much a thing you do as, like, a way that you treat people.
It's a state of mind,
man. Oh, man.
Whoa. Okay. So okay. There are some things to be aware of with all of this.
Yes. With everything.
For example,
yes.
When Jason and I were opening up for the first time, like he said, I went on some really bad dates.
And you were, to clarify, when you guys first opened up, like, you were kind of the more hesitant on
Jason. Definitely. Yeah. Absolutely. Jason heard about it for years and years before.
Well, I had never heard of polyamory.
Another. Yes.
But more just about
open
some kind of open relationship or non-monogamy or something.
But it was a thing that you had been really interested in, and you had actually found a woman who was polyamorous, I guess, or who was open to a certain degree on OkCupid.
Yeah, and she was in a polyamorous
dating her. Yeah.
It was the first I'd heard of it.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you started dating her, and you kind of went on this date with her with the impetus of, like, oh, I'm going to get more familiar with this thing
interested in.
Was
this when you guys were together?
Well, yes.
Okay. Well,
kind of. It was in the week of broken up-ish.
The week that you guys were broken up.
But when he came home, then we got back together, essentially.
Okay, great.
Yeah. Right. But basically, we did that for a while. We were polyamorous. And then after a while, Jay saw how unhappy I was and said, like, why don't we just not for a while?
Right. And I didn't have any relationships at the time. Like, mine had ended. It wasn't like I broke up with other partners to close our relationship.
Yeah.
And we did that, and at the time, all of this was exploration. It's like, I don't know if this is
what I want.
I don't know if this is what's going on. And we did that. And then later, Emily came to me and said, hey, there's someone I'm interested in. Let's, you know, I would like to try this again. And we talked about that for a while. I want to stop the story right here, though, before we go on to the next part.
Please.
Which is that I think a lot of people can fall into this trap, though, of opening and closing their relationship because somehow that seems, it's like having an escape hatch of like this, you know, oh, we can try it, but I can escape back to monogamy whenever I want.
Whenever I want,
And as Dedeker was pointing out when we were talking about this before recording, that each time you do that, it gets harder.
Yeah, it's that whole change thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like any time that you're like, okay, we're going to make a big change, we're going to be open. Okay, no, we're going to change things, we're going to close again. Oh, no, let's change things again, let's open up again. No, we're going to change things, we're going to close again. And, sure, people do it, people have done it, but, like, each subsequent time that you do that, it gets harder both to, like, open up again and to close again and to open up again. Like, it just gets harder and harder and harder.
But, well, that's when it's kind of operating off of this fear-based model, in my opinion. When it's like, I'm scared, it's going poorly, so we're going to close in and, like, reestablish something. But I do know, like, I have family members who are polyamorous, and they, each time they got pregnant, closed their relationship for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just like, okay, we need to be here for the family right now, like, I'm not feeling great about my body, and I'm, you know, having a lot of hormones, and so I want to kind of feel really secure in this specific primary relationship.
Do you know a lot about the specifics of how they did that? Because I'm curious if it meant ending current relationships, or if it was I'm not going to date new people during
this question.
That's a great
question,
and I
don't know. Yeah. And I agree, that obviously, like, hurting other people as an entire other layer for the sake of a primary relationship.
I think there is something to be said about, like, if there's something major happening in one of your relationships, like there's a lot of tension or a big change, like having a baby or maybe moving away or whatever, that there is something to be said for deciding, like, let's try to avoid bringing in new people mm-hmm. as much as we mm-hmm. can right now.
Right.
You know, just because, like, maybe it's not quite a stable life situation to be starting to date new people.
Sure.
But, like, that's something different from being, like...
Like, work ending.
Okay, now I just got to, like, end every relationship in order to close it again. Because that's the other concern is, like, I start to get concerned about ethics.
Right.
And,
sure.
like, how can someone... want to be in a relationship with you and want to open themselves up to you and be vulnerable with you.
If you could just cut it off at any
time. Yeah, if the axe could come down at any moment.
Yeah. Right.
Outside of your control.
Right,
entirely.
For the sake of someone else.
Yes.
Having nothing to do with your own relationship.
Yeah.
No, for sure,
yeah.
for sure.
And that's, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That is the challenging part.
So to go back to our story.
Yeah.
When, you know, Emily and I, we spent probably a week, like, each day talking for a little while. But instead of just being like, yeah, man.
Let's do it.
I wanted to do. Let's do it. We talked about it for a while to really determine, like, what did we learn from the first time of doing this? What do we think is different now? Whatever. And eventually got to this point of, like, okay, let's do this. You're going to go meet up with this guy, go on this date. But if we're going to do this, we're just going to keep doing it.
Yeah.
We're not going to go back again.
Yeah.
And I feel like the other part of that is that there are challenges that come up. We talk about them on this show a lot, right? Mm-hmm. There are challenges in any relationship, but within polyamory, there are some specific challenges that you might not have to face otherwise. And if you always know that you have this escape hatch of just like, oh, well,
abort.
I can always close
abort.
It whenever I want.
Yeah.
You don't actually have to grow.
You're not forcing yourself to grow, mm-hmm. to work through those things, to find better ways, because... you don't need to, and it's easier mm-hmm. to just back out again.
Yeah.
Or to, like, suffer for a little while and then back out again.
Yeah. I mean, I wrote about that in my blog about, like, opening up this relationship with my current primary partner mm-hmm. to a bigger degree and having him really, like, actively start going on dates and how intense that was for me. And, like, I've done this before. Why am I feeling all these intense emotions?
Mm-hmm.
And it really did take, like, daily work on my part of being like, okay, I'm going to be okay with this. I want to be okay with this.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally I got there and it was great. So,
yeah. That's, you know, to use the analogy of working out or something,
yeah.
that it's, if, you know, you go to the gym once, you're going to be super sore afterward and not get a lot of benefit from it.
Totally.
Whereas if you work out regularly, you're going to be sore at first, but it's going to get better and you're going to get stronger and you're going to get, you know, healthier and all of that. So I think it's a little bit similar that if we have this feeling like we can escape, we're not forcing ourselves to do the personal growth that I think is one of the best parts of opening a relationship and looking at things, at least not, you know, not just accepting that there's one way relationships go and that's just the default, whether you're still monogamous or not, but just kind of moving away from that assumption. I think the personal growth of it is the best part, or one of the best parts.
Yeah, definitely.
And I think you rob yourself of that mm-hmm. by going back and forth and thinking that just like, oh, whenever things are hard, we'll just cut that off.
So to leave you guys with a little something, I think that something also to keep in mind through this process, if whether you're opening up your relationship, whether you're introducing someone new to polyamory and they're, you know, not feeling so hot about it, that just bear in mind that, like, everyone's allowed to have their feelings.
Mm-hmm.
That people are allowed to feel things. If your partner's having a hard time, like, they're allowed to have a hard time, you know, like, it's not helpful to tell people, like, you shouldn't be jealous, you shouldn't be insecure, you shouldn't be feeling this, you shouldn't be doing that, you know. Everyone's allowed to have their feelings. However, as I also like to say, feelings are not facts. As in, the feelings are not facts. As in, it does require this awareness of, like, okay, great, I have this feeling, it feels like shit, and I hate it. But it doesn't mean it's going to last forever. It doesn't mean it says something about me. It doesn't mean it says something about this relationship necessarily.
And it doesn't mean that my partner is doing it to me.
It doesn't mean that, and it doesn't necessarily mean that my partner is doing something wrong to me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like sounds very simple, but it's very difficult in practice often.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
And let me see if I can find this because I wrote it down and it was so good that you said earlier. Oh, well, we talked about, like, the different realities.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
right.
The idea of different realities. Damn it, I don't know if I put
the
it down.
The idea of competing narratives or competing realities.
This is it.
Yeah,
so this idea that, you know, maybe you're opening things up with a partner and you guys have read all the same books together, you're on the same page,
mm-hmm.
You decide to go out on a first date, you have a great time, you come home, your partner's upset. And that, like, in your partner's reality, yeah. it's still hurtful that, like, you went on a first date and, mm-hmm. like, challenging and really difficult. In your reality, it's like, I did everything right. We talked about it. You said it was okay.
Yeah.
I left. You said it was okay. You know, like, right. we've been okay at every stage of the process, but I come back and you're still feeling shitty. Like, what is that about?
Yeah.
But kind of maintaining this awareness of, like, okay, I understand that, like, my partner's reality right now is this, is, like, feeling alone or scared or abandoned or whatever, even though I didn't necessarily do something wrong. Mm-hmm. And your partner being able to recognize, like, okay, I know that my reality is feeling scared and abandoned and lonely, but that your reality is, like...
You did do everything right.
You did do yeah. everything right.
You did your due diligence. Know?
And so understanding that, like, there can be many different perceptions of a particular event and many different feelings that come up as the result of those perceptions, but that not one person has a monopoly right. on what yeah. the truth is, necessarily.
And, right. And the thing that you said that really got me was that there's a difference between... feeling hurt mm-hmm. and then saying you hurt me. Yeah. It is a fine line and it's blurred yeah. sometimes yeah. and it's easy to potentially be like, well, you hurt me in this moment, you did this mm-hmm. thing. But right. really, in reality, you can feel hurt without your partner being, ever yeah. hurting you actively. Yeah,
yeah. Right. That yeah. is not an active thing they did. Mm-hmm. Like, I might feel hurt as a result of something my partner did.
Yeah.
But it's not like they went out and hurt
did
me.
Something to
it's,
me.
It is yeah. a fine... You know, it seems like a nitpicky sort of semantic difference, but it actually does have
oh, it's huge.
Very large impacts on yeah. how you respond to that and how you feel
yeah.
about it.
Yeah, because it comes up all the time, because it can be something like, you did everything right. Like, you went out, you mm-hmm. went on a date, like, you maybe you slept with someone new, and then you came and, like, communicated it, and you were safe and everything, and mm-hmm. but your partner still feels upset. Mm-hmm. And if your partner goes to this place of, like, you did something wrong, because I feel upset, that must mean you did something wrong, or right. I'm going to find something that you did wrong. Right. Versus, like, I know you did everything right, but I feel upset, and let's talk about that. You know, it's a subtle difference, but it makes a lot of difference.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then also with this, I think helps the person who's worried about hurting their partner understand that you don't have to feel...
guilt.
That you don't have to feel that guilt.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That they're, in their reality, they could still be very hurt because of something that you did, but that it... but that you don't have to be guilty about that, that it yeah. doesn't mean that you're wrong.
Yeah.
Like,
mm-hmm.
that there's also the dichotomy on that side.
Totally.
Because I think that a lot of times it's easy to fall into this trap of this cycle of kind of by default feeling guilty about going on a date with anyone else
totally.
Or having any kind of sexual experience.
Yes.
And that I like to make the argument that because you're feeling that way, you're actually more likely to subtly act in a way that's going to make your partner... feel more upset,
yeah,
actually.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because you're kind of very subtly approaching telling them things with this fear.
Yeah, and like a horse,
bit
they
of
can
hesitancy.
Smell fear.
Yeah.
Right. People are good at... people are good at identifying other people's feelings, just like horses are.
Yeah, I was like, people are good at being horses. Yeah.
People are good at being horses. That's the moral of the story for this episode.
Well, on that note, now that we've gone longer than we intended to,
and
we've realized that people are horses...
And people are horses, yeah.
Where can they find us?
Yeah, where can they find us?
If you want to check out more of our stuff, you can go to multiamory.com, or you can find us on Facebook, MultiAmory. Or on Twitter at MultiAmory, Instagram MultiAmory_podcast. Basically, just search MultiAmory and whatever your favorite social media is. We're probably there. If not, let us know that you would love for us to be there. And of course, take a moment to write us a review if you haven't already. If you didn't take a break earlier in the episode, do that. It really does make a big difference in terms of helping other people find us. And if you want to get involved in the community and helping us to expand this and do more things and more live events and more online events and create more shows, check out our Patreon at patreon.com/multiamory. All right. We look forward to hearing from you.
See you next week.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.